Well, the Summit County Council meets tomorrow, work session starting at 2 o'clock at the County Courthouse in Colville. In the studio with a preview, County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So first off, a property tax exemption for the Peace House parcel. I'm guessing probably no issues here other than Doug Clyde recusing himself?
We'll see what, I think that's what's happened in the past. Whenever something related to the Peace House comes up, because he does have close involvement with that project and the board. But I don't see any issues with this one. I went through the application yesterday. It looks pretty standard.
Okay, and this is required then of all nonprofit organizations?
That's correct. So when they want the property that their buildings are on to be exempt from property taxes, this is the process they have to go through.
Yeah, with like 100 nonprofits, how big of a hit is this to the county taxes?
Well, I'm not sure about that, but it is a way that our community can support these nonprofits that provide just great and varied essential services to our community in that third sector.
Okay. And let's see, for County Government Month, there's going to be a recognition for some 18 employees plus the team at the DMV. Does this happen every year during County Government Month?
It was a new thing that we decided to do this year. We did feature some employees last year during County Government Month, but kind of concentrated more on departments and offices to make the public more familiar with what we do. This was just a slightly different method to highlight both what individuals contribute to county government, but also what they do within their job title in order to provide services to our citizens.
So they'll just get up during the meeting and get some kind of...
Yeah, so, you know, and a lot of times some of these folks are very humble and don't necessarily want to speak in front of everybody, but we've written up something on each of them. They'll get a certificate with that, as well as they've been featured on our Facebook posts over the month and with some very good detail on what they provide to the county.
And I was going to note that there is a big social media campaign highlighting, and so... That's just 18. It seems like a lot more than 18.
Well, it does, and it's some of them, you know, obviously have been reposted by several people, and you know, it's been a very popular thing to get the word out. And the folks that are being featured, you know, it's interesting to see how many people know them and have been served by them in some way, either in their private lives or in their county role, and so a lot of positive feedback.
Okay, let's see. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Related to that, can you talk a little bit about the next steps now that the University of Utah has been approved as the Mental Health and Substance Abuse Council?
Yeah, and I know Aaron Newman has been in to talk about this as well in a lot more detail. But, you know, now we are in this four-month period where there is negotiations between the University of Utah and our current provider about how to not only provide service during that four-month period, but make the actual transition in that August to September timeframe. And of course, the state department that regulates Medicaid funding towards mental health services, as well as our health department folks, will be involved in that. So that's what's going to happen over this four-month period. Of course, contract negotiations within that as well, now that there's a selected provider. So that we can get those contracts in place.
Okay. Let's see. The declaration that County Assessor Steve Martin has resigned, and I guess his last day today. So what's the procedure from here?
So, the Democratic Party, which Steve is a member of, has a certain period of time to put forth a person to serve as that assessor through the end of the term. And then the county council will then take that name or names and make their decision based on that recommendation. So that's the process, and there's certain days that they have in order to make that determination. In the meantime, Travis Lewis in our assessor's office will be serving as the temporary assessor, and that's part of the process.
All right. This was a position already on the 2020 ballot?
So, yes, Steve was reelected. So there is a No, he wasn't reelected. He's still serving out his, he was one of those 6-year term individuals. So the person designated would serve out that term. They would not go for election until the regular time.
Okay. Anything else on the agenda that you wanted to mention?
Not specifically, just coming up. We've got 3 conversations with council coming up. We've got one tonight at the Richens Building from 6 to 8 p.m. Where we'll have a couple of council members available to answer questions, as well as a lot of staff there to talk about everything from transportation projects that will be happening this year. Some of our service providers like Mountain Regional Water or Basin Rec will also be on hand to talk about things that are going on in their area. And then on Thursday and Friday between 7 a.m. and 9 a.m. Tonight is in Colville from 6 to 8 p.m. On Thursday, 7 to 9 a.m. is at the Richens Building, and then Friday we will be at the South Summit Services Building from 7 to 9 a.m. Come out and learn what's going on during this construction season and this planning season. There'll also be planning folks there to talk about the Kimball Junction Neighborhood Plan if people have questions about that, and just trying to get as much contact out there with the community as we can.
All right. Well, let's talk just a little bit about that. That was the Kimball Junction Master Plan kind of brought up at the joint meeting yesterday between the Summit County Council, Park City Council, and the Park City School District. Talking about being a more complete community and more accessible to pedestrians and cyclists. To do that, we're talking about a lot of road work to make something like that happen.
Well, it's not just road work, Leslie. It's also, you know, how do we build things in the future to make it work better for pedestrians and cyclists and alternative modes of transportation? It's thinking about the whole built environment in conjunction with the fact that we're still going to have vehicles moving around in the area because there's 2 major highways that run through there. So it's not an easy task, but it is the right time to be thinking about not only the acreage and the density that's not built out there yet, but as things redevelop, how they can all work together better.
Yeah, so do you have people out there on bikes kind of giving you some feedback here?
We always have people giving us feedback, and we're actually starting a group through our transportation planning efforts to bring some bicyclists, probably some pedestrian advocates around too, maybe even some advocates around those with disabilities, in order to really understand better what isn't working out there, which I imagine the list is rather long right now, as well as what can be done better in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I rode my bike out to the dentist office the other day, and all of a sudden the trail just ends, and now it's like, okay, now what?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, now you're under the throes of traffic.
Right, you know, everybody has a different comfort level about what they're willing to do. You know, some people like to be on the trails exclusively. Some cyclists like to be on roads exclusively. And so, you know, balancing all of those interests is the difficult part. And then, you know, also the folks that are walking, because we're trying to encourage people to use transit and then walk to those destinations on each end. So a lot to consider in this neighborhood plan.
Okay. What's the latest on the spring runoff season?
So nothing that I've seen so far. We had some email traffic last night from our emergency manager and our public works director, just kind of monitoring the stream gauges that are out, and getting some feedback from residents that live along our tributaries. Nothing alarming at this point, but we are prepared. I was listening to your weather report as I was coming in, and you know, the temperatures are really helping us with a kind of a slow melt so far. So we're ready when and if things change, but so far so good.
All right. And then something I believe it was you who had mentioned at a recent council meeting, the legislative session passed a new regulation that you just became aware of and that it's going to be stricter about government employees using government resources. What are we talking about here?
Yeah, so I've got, actually right now, the attorney's office is looking at this legislation, and, you know, it seems like it is a reaction perhaps to something that happened in the state, and I'm not sure of the incident, where some government resources were used by county or city employees or perhaps state employees in an inappropriate manner. You know, most local governments already have policies and procedures around this, but obviously someone in the legislature and the legislature itself felt that something needed to be tightened up. So we need to look at that legislation in comparison to our current policies to see how those either jive or not.
So what are we talking, like cars and computers?
It could apply to everything. For instance, I part of my contract, I have a county vehicle for use. And so, we'll have to look at all of these things to see if that's still a viable option or whether I have to do something different. But that's just an example. It could also apply to whether you use on your desktop computer at work, whether you can access personal email or not, as an example. So we'll have to be looking at all of those things.
Okay. All right, Tom, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:25. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Summit County Clubhouse planning to open early this summer and this month. Free listening lunches will be held for community members to find out more and how to be involved. In the studio with details, I have Sally Jablin, president of the Summit County Clubhouse Board, and Lynn Rutan, chair of the Member Recruitment Committee. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Sally, maybe we can just start with you, and again, you can remind us, what is the Summit County Clubhouse? So you want to take that, Lynn?
Actually, I will. Mm-hmm. The Clubhouse is a welcoming place for people who have a history of mental illness. It's a place where they can learn job and also social skills, and also rebuild their community, pulling them out of isolation. It's based on Clubhouse International standards, which is an evidence-based program that's been going for nearly 60 years, actually, and there are more than 300 around the world. So they have a great deal of success in their programs. And Summit County Clubhouse will be the fifth in Utah, and it is going to be unique for the local population, but it is going to be based on these standards. Okay. And the Summit County strategic plan calls for a clubhouse.
All right, so the standards are the criteria. I mean, is it anybody who wants to be part of this? Or, I mean, is there
Yes.
some defining?
The only definition is a history of mental illness. And it is totally voluntary. It is free to the members. And it is then supported by community donations and also grants. And also Medicaid will kick in as well. So.
And is it maybe for somebody who has had a difficult, because of the mental illness, difficult time keeping a job or
yes.
getting employed? Or
yes, it ups people's work skills, it increases their education, and it really builds things like teamwork and working and communicating and having relationships with other people, and that ends up really affecting their life and the people around them as well.
Yeah, and in terms of the structure of the clubhouse, Sally, I mean, who runs it? Who's in charge?
The members are in charge. The clubhouse is a unique organizational structure because the members are the folks who run this nonprofit. They do finance administration, they do food planning and preparation, education opportunity development, they take care of the physical plant, and they even write the grants and provide peer support to other clubhouse members. They are supported by a paid staff who facilitates their efforts and works side by side with them to run the clubhouse. And the last piece of it is part of the structure, which is critical to this whole thing, is something that the clubhouse has named a work order day, so that Clubhouse is open 5 days a week like any business would be, and 7-8 hours a day as any business would be. And in the morning, there is a work order to the day, and the members volunteer for the various tasks and activities that need to be completed that day.
So has that staff person been hired at this point?
We are interviewing executive directors now, and we're looking for candidates, and they can find the job posting on our website and on our Facebook page.
Okay. This is going to be located at the Christian Center?
It will be for now. They are giving us temporary space until we can find permanent space of our own. One of the important things for Clubhouse is to be autonomous of any other organization. So we will be looking for a building, an office, even the donation of a trailer and some land to put it on, so that we can grow autonomously according to the Clubhouse International standards.
Yeah, how big does it have to be?
Not very big at all.
Mm-hmm. And how many people is this going to serve, do you expect, here in Summit County?
That's hard to know, because part of the, we've had surveys that have indicated 40, 50, but if one out of five people in the United States suffer from mental illness, that really tells you how many people potentially could be involved in this program. And once a member, always a member. The hope is that it's a launch pad rather than a landing strip, so that people will move on. But mental illness is a chronic disease, so there is always a place for people to return to.
And we're reaching out to both North and South Summit County, so it's not just Park City,
right,
but it's all of Summit County. So we could be looking anywhere up to 100 total of potential members. We're hoping in the first year to start with 10.
All right. And so when does it open?
We're shooting for between the 1st of July and the 1st of August.
Mm-hmm. And what will be in at least these temporary space? Just stackable chairs and...
A table, mm-hmm. Chairs.
Computers.
We're looking for donations of computers and printers and all the technology that goes along with it. And that's pretty much all we need to get started. What will be very helpful if there's also kitchen facilities to get started, because one of the things that the Clubhouse, as part of its standards, at some point we should be providing lunch and the opportunity for our members to plan the lunches, to shop for and prepare the lunches. And this is a big part of being part of a community.
Mm-hmm. And would you bring in, like, guest speakers or job recruiters?
That's the reason we're having the listening lunches, which one is tomorrow on the 1st from 12 to 1 at the Christian Center, and the next one will be May 15th, same time, same location. It's a time for us to explain the Clubhouse, but equally important, it's a time for us to talk to potential members about what they see as their interests, their ideas, and their dreams. And so they're interested in work, or are they interested in social interaction? So we'll be exploring all of those things with the members.
One of the most important things for the Clubhouse is to create relationships with local businesses, mm-hmm. where they provide transitional employment for our members, so that once a week, a member can work there part-time, let's say 4 hours a week, for minimum wage to actually get paid. And we have one member who's so excited about Clubhouse because he wants to work for Home Depot and he doesn't have the work experience to do that. So what we are hoping to do is create a relationship, for example, with Home Depot to get him transitional employment there and see if he can learn the kinds of skills that Home Depot is looking for to be able to hire him into a real job. That's an exciting thing to be able to do for someone.
The transitional employment is supported by the staff, so the staff is equally trained with the member, so that there is always backup for the transitional employer.
Okay, well, there seems to be a lot of interest in it, because you got a good turnout at a recent meeting?
We had 50 people at a community engagement program. We are now really reaching out, particularly to mental health service providers, because they are the ones who will be able to refer us to clients who could benefit from this program. And we want providers to know that we are not competing with them. We do not provide therapy or clinical support. We are a completely different kind of program that supports the work that they do in therapy with their clients. So we are filling a gap, and that's what the Summit County Council and actually the Park City Council recognized in putting us in their strategic plans.
Okay. We had 8 providers at this community engagement meeting, one of whom brought 4 of his clients so that they could understand. And we'd love to see that happen again when we have our next community engagement meeting. And we're also planning to have one in Colville sometime between now and the end of the summer to reach out there as well.
Okay. Again, so listening lunches tomorrow and again May 15th at the Christian Center, noon to 1 p.m. Everyone that thinks that they
and
want
wants
to know
a
more?
Free lunch, yeah.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Well, just that the Summit County Clubhouse has earned its 501c3 nonprofit, and as a small new nonprofit, we would appreciate any donors taking a look at us.
Okay. And the website then for the clubhouse is what?
Www, of course. SummitCountyClubhouse.org.
And we're also on Facebook.
Okay. Lynn, Sally, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:35. Well, the Soldier Hollow Bike Festival is being held May 2nd through the 5th. In the studio with details, I have race director and the director of the Summit Bike Club, MJ Turner, along with one of the professional riders, Ryan Stanish. Good morning to both of you.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
So, MJ, this is a pretty big deal, an international competition with some of the best riders in the world?
Yeah, at least best riders in North America are primarily coming here. It's a 4-day stage race. It's ranked with UCI as an S1. So there's only one level higher that you can go to, and then beyond that, you're a World Cup level event. So
yes.
One of the top in the country and top in North America this year.
And when was the last time that Utah hosted a pro mountain bike races? I know we used to do it with the Norba races.
Yeah, there used to be the Norbas way back. Then there hasn't been anything for a while. This will be our 3rd year of the event. So we've kind of kept ramping it up, building up the level of the event, and year 3 basically for pro races in Utah.
Okay, so you've got some experience doing this.
Yeah,
you've served as the race director the last 3 years as well.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So anything that needs to be done to the trails there to get it ready for this?
We've spent probably 100 plus hours this spring just cleaning things up. There's been a bunch of different trails that have been used for like horse riding, for the Nordic skiing that are kind of there, and you're just getting them cleaned up and a little more safe for the biking too. This year we have one lap that's 18.5 miles, so that's a big step for us, and so there's a lot of new trails that we haven't used the last couple of years for the event that we've had to kind of revamp to get ready.
Yeah, but Ryan, don't you like the rocks and the cliffs and the really challenging features? I mean, does this course have all of that?
It's got a good variety of features, the Soho course. And I know they've added some features since last year, which I just got back into town yesterday, so haven't had a chance to ride the new stuff that they've added to the course this year.
The cross-country course for the UCI's Cat Ones has some really hard stuff this year. It's a big step up.
I'm excited.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what kind of impact does the 4 days of racing have on the trails that everybody else likes to use?
So Soldier Hollow, those trails there aren't used a whole lot during the regular season. So really what ends up happening is that the racers burn in the trails, make them really nice that you can actually see the trails. They're a little smoother, less grass, that kind of stuff. So very positive impact to the trails.
Yeah, and are they in okay condition given we've got some rain, maybe even some snow showers?
Yeah, everything's dried out. There's one very small spot that because of the Nordic, and they had the World Cup biathlon there this winter, that there's a little bit of leftover that's been melting right into where kind of the one of the smaller natural rock gardens are. So we'll have to see what happens in the next couple of days if we still use that. But otherwise, trails are dry. They're in great shape right now. So a little bit of water, some moisture, keeps them tacky, keeps them really nice.
Okay. So as I mentioned, 4 days of racing starting Thursday. Can you kind of run through the schedule?
Yeah. Thursday is the time trial day. We'll have some vendors that start coming in doing some expo work there. That's the time trial for those who are signed up for the whole stage race. Friday morning, we have a mountain bike biathlon race. That's not a part of the stage race. A mountain bike biathlon is like the biathlon in the winter, where they take a lap with their mountain bikes for this, and then the guns, the little air rifles, will be at the range and shoot the targets, do penalty lap, go out again, so forth. So very unique opportunity right at the Olympic venue that hosted that. And then Friday evening is the short track races, which is a part of the stage race. Saturday is the cross country day, which is a part of the stage race. Also, people can sign up for just individual races of the short track, cross country, and the marathon on Sunday, as well as the whole stage race. So Saturday is the cross country. We have junior skills on Friday that I forgot about. We have a dual slalom on Saturday. We have a celebration where we'll have the USA Cycling new CEO there Saturday evening. So Saturday's got a lot of different stuff going on. Demo bikes, brands will all be out there full force on Saturday as well. And then Sunday's the marathon day. And that's it on Sunday.
So that, how many, 26 miles or longer?
The marathon is, so in the mountain biking world, marathon just is like the longer distance kind of race. I'd say, 20 plus miles-ish range ends up becoming a marathon. That one is 2 18.5-mile laps, so just under 40 miles.
Okay. Ryan, are you competing in all of them?
I'm doing all four stages, the Thursday evening, Friday evening, Saturday, and then Sunday, the whole stage race in the pro elite category. And I think, how many do we have registered?
We have close to 70, and the women we have just over 30. I think.
Yeah, so that's a big, really big field for
It's about double what our numbers were last year for the event.
Yeah, so, I mean, you mentioned time trials. Is that to move further into it? I mean, if some people don't meet the criteria there, then they...
So the time trial is just kind of the first stage, and that determines... So if you win the time trial, then for the second day, for the short track, you get the first call-up. So then it's by standings is how you get seated for the rest of the days. So essentially it kind of helps with the rest of the weekend if you do well in the early stages.
Okay. So Ryan, how are you doing in the standings?
I'm kind of midfield so far this year. Not doing quite as well as I had hoped to this year, but kind of riding into the race season and getting a good grasp on where I am and what I need to improve on. Move up.
Is it a year-long sport? I mean, do you just go into the southern hemisphere, or is it just kind of a spring, summer, fall?
Well, I kind of make it a year-long because I go back home to Australia in the U.S. winter and then do some racing down there over Christmas time when it's summer there. But the season in the U.S. usually starts around March, April, and goes until October. So it is a pretty long season as far as like maintaining your fitness throughout the whole year, basically.
Yeah. And do you have a strength in any of these races? I mean, do you prefer the shorter ones as opposed to the longer ones? Or
I tend to like the longer ones a little better. I have a hard time going fast for the short amount of time, but I can ride into the longer races and have strong finish in those.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just you're at the mercy of your equipment, right?
Hopefully not. No, I mean, there is a huge component of mechanical issues or flat tires or anything like that, and it's kind of learning to manage those and limit the possibility of anything happening.
Yeah, and the stage race is unique because you have to really be on top of your equipment coming into the event, as well as each night making sure that it's ready to go the next days. And if something happened with your bike on those earlier stages, like getting that bike up and running again for the following days.
Yeah. So do you use the same bike then for all four of these stages, or is it, do you kind of swap bikes out for?
Yeah, we same bike through the whole, all four stages. There
That's
are some
race rules.
Race rules. Yeah. I think if it wasn't race rules, there would be some changing bikes between a full suspension and a hardtail and that kind of thing. But you can change tires and wheels. So you can do some like small changes that will benefit for different stages.
Or like your chain ring, so your gearing ratios are better set up for the shorter races with maybe less climbing compared to the long race with some steeper climbing type of things.
Okay. Yeah, so there's subtle things you can do that's not changing the whole bike, but changing different things that might suit a longer stage or a shorter stage better.
Okay. So, I mean, is it a venue, good venue to watch?
Yes, it's, you can answer to this too, but I think it's the best spectator-friendly venue for professional mountain bike racing in the country.
Because yeah, there's just lots of areas to get.
It's basically like amphitheater setup where you're down in the base at the start line and the expo, and the course just is right there in front of your face the whole way around. From right there, the cross country course, you could watch probably 80% of the race. The marathon race, not quite as much because they go back behind the mountains, but I'd say even there, at a minimum, 40% of the race that you can watch from the venue, where typically most races, they start, they're gone for an hour, they come back and finish. But here you can actually watch and spectate. They also, for the cross country and the, so Saturdays and Sundays race, they come through the start finish area at a half lap as well. So they start, they do half of lap, come right back through, go do another half and come through again. So they're always coming in and being right in the middle of where people can kind of watch and see what's going on.
Yeah. How many people are you expecting?
We're hoping for 600 plus racers. We're at, what did I say, like 450 currently. And today's the last day for online registration. It's always our heaviest one. People wait for the last minute. See how the weather is. It seems like it's going to be really nice weekend, like in the 70s, nice and sunny. So yeah, we're hoping for some big numbers, which is about double what our numbers were last year.
Okay. And what about spectators?
Spectators wise, we're hoping for 1,000 plus.
Good.
We really don't know what to expect. It's our first year really doing a bigger expo, having the demos. We have 20 plus different brands out there doing like demo bikes, showing different gear, like Cannondale will be out there, POC, Kodiak Cakes, get some pancakes. So a lot more kind of different things going on interactive to be able to come out, watch, spectate, see some different things and not necessarily race yourself too. And just to come out and participate in those activities, it's free. So come see what's up.
Okay. Well, good luck to you, Ryan, but we're rooting for hometown kid, Keegan Swenson. So
I know he's my roommate, so.
But good luck to you.
Thank you.
Anything else you wanted to mention?
No, just come on out, sohobikefest.com.
Okay. Hey, thanks. Ryan Standish and MJ Turner with the Soho Bike Festival. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:49. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Film Series, along with the Park City Community Foundation, present the film No Small Matter. It's happening tomorrow, May 1st, 7 p.m. at the Jim Santee Auditorium. In the studio with details about the screening, as well as the panel afterwards, I have the Executive Director of the Community Foundation, Katie Wright, along with Community Impact Director, Ollie Wilder. Good morning.
Good morning.
So the documentary free, as I mentioned, at Showtime 7 p.m. at the Santee Auditorium. Ollie, why did the foundation want to show this film in particular?
One thing that we've been seeing for some time is that early childhood learning is not getting really enough attention in the community. That's not to say there's not a lot of good stuff going on, but we realize that kids before the age of 5, that's when most of their brain development happens. And if we don't give them the best opportunities before that time, then it has reverberations through the rest of their lives, through the rest of their families' lives, and for us as a community. We've also seen more recently, as you know, we're working with Park City Municipal on a community convening process around social equity. And we did a survey recently, and early childhood education and safe and affordable childcare rose to third in the, on the list of issues people are concerned about in the community that are related to equity. So we felt like the time was right to focus on early childhood education, early learning, and childcare.
Yeah. Have you seen the film, Katie?
I have.
Yeah, so with two young kids, I mean, what did you get out of it?
Well, I was teary almost the whole time, so it definitely hits close to home as a, you know, a parent of small children. But the film is excellent. It shows the perspective of a handful of families, also of providers, and really just gives the full scope of the challenge. And like all things, we're not the only community facing this challenge. It's a national issue. It's actually a bipartisan issue. And it's just a system that's kind of broken. And so families who have small children are always juggling. And as Ali said, we pay the price as a community for years after, and so do those children. And I think one thing to think about as a community is, you know, you send a child off to kindergarten and they're excited, they have their brand new backpack, but some of those kids sit down in that seat and they are already behind and they'll never catch up. And I really feel that we can do better for our children here by creating more seats and more opportunities. And Ali said that there's great programs going on, but we need more resources to expand.
Okay, so you'll be moderating the post-film panel. Tell me who's going to be on that.
It's an excellent panel. We have Dr. Jill Gilday, the superintendent of Park City Schools, Lizette Zarita from Parents as Teachers Program of Holy Cross Ministries, and Anna Thomas, who's a policy analyst with Voices for Utah Children. So we'll hear from experts that are working hand-in-hand with families doing home visiting programs. We'll hear about the statewide perspective on this and some of our challenges from a policy standpoint. And then Dr. Jill Gilday is an expert and understands what's happening in the schools, what's the impact of children not having good services 0 to 3, and what are the benefits when they do have those services.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of services are we talking about?
Some of the things that you can focus on, if you look locally, we have some really good child care providers. Child care itself is a big one, high quality and affordable child care. That's really what led to PC Tots getting started about 3 years ago or so. They went from zero to now they're serving 110 kids, but they tend to have a waiting list of as many as over 100 kids at a time. I mean, that's just an indication that people really need that service and there just isn't enough to go around. Also, you've got some parents and caregivers are able to stay home with their kids and care for them, but they don't always have the resources they need to give that child the best possible opportunities. So that's where, for example, the Holy Cross Ministries Parents as Teachers program comes in, where they send parent educators into the home with the family about once a month. They help them do things like, you know, learn how to read more to their kids, just talk more to their kids, involve the kids in the day-to-day. And then they also have the opportunity to look around and say, gosh, maybe this family could use this other service or this other help. Because it isn't always just the child that needs help. Sometimes their whole environment could use some opportunities so that the kid has a better environment to thrive in.
Does the film address at all parents putting down their cell phones or their tablets? because I see that so much, mm-hmm. parents just not engaged with their children.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that is an issue. I don't think it's an explicitly brought out thing in the film, but I think what they are trying to note is that parents really care about their kids, but they're not always conscious of how they can best serve their kids, how they can best give their kids those opportunities.
Yeah, and I mean, I know, I'm old school. At the same time, it was, are we pushing our kids too far too fast?
You know, I think that the reality is that many families need dual incomes to make ends meet. And I think the question then becomes, who is caring for the children when that mother or father or that parent has to get up and go to work in the day? And the fact of the matter is that in our community, there are children who are left in unsafe conditions and truly are not in a good spot. And I think and believe that as a community, we can do better for all children. There's no doubt in all the data and research, and it's been researched very thoroughly, that it's critical to give children an enriching environment 0 to 3. That environment can be a home environment, a center-based care, but with a economy based on hospitality and service jobs. There's a lot of families struggling to make ends meet, working hourly wages, and they don't have a safe place to leave their child. We have about 400, 450 babies born a year in our county. And when we heard that number at the foundation, we thought, you know what? We can get our arms around that. I think we're a community who steps in, who cares about every person, and the smallest people need our attention.
Okay. Again, the film tomorrow night, Wednesday, May 1st, 7 p.m. at Jim Santee Auditorium. Interesting, you're going to be providing some free child care for kids 2 and older. So who's providing that?
Katie Wang of Park City Film, our partner on the showing, managed to arrange that. And so we've got a person who's able to take about up to 10 children. So people need to contact Katie in advance if they want to take advantage of that service, just to make sure that we don't have too many kids. But yeah, I mean, it seems apt, doesn't it, that you'd have child care at a film about early childhood and child care. We also are going to have the film with subtitles in Spanish. And for the post-film panel, we have simultaneous translation with headphones. So we're trying to make sure that this is accessible to all members of our community to the degree possible.
Great. Anything else you want to mention?
I encourage everyone to learn about this issue. There's some really good work being done. We have some business leaders who are stepping in to help expand opportunities. So this will be an opportunity to learn about the issue and then maybe jump in and help.
And I just want to thank Epic Vail Resorts, Epic Promise, and Park City Mountain, who actually have given us a grant last year to help with the social equity work, particularly in terms of community engagement, just making sure that we're able to bring people together. That is what's helping to fund this particular event, and so we're really grateful to them for helping us make this happen.
Okay. Ollie Well, Katie White, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.